How about this weather? If you just shuddered a little bit at that, you're not alone, I'm sure. Small talk certainly gets a bad rap in some circles, and maybe you feel that it's shallow or boring. But the truth is, humans couldn't communicate without it. Let's explore what that means for us, what small talk is for, and how to get better at it, perhaps even come to love it someday. Nick Enfield is with us today. He's a professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney and the author of a book called How We Talk, The Inner Workings of Conversation. Nick Enfield, this is completely in my wheelhouse. I'm so happy to be having this discussion today.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me, Hillary.
What's happening when we open with a reference to the weather? What is happening when we do small talk?
Well, I think you can probably predict if we open with a reference to the weather that the person we're talking to is a stranger or somebody that we, you know, aren't particularly close to. So that's often what small talk denotes, is that, maybe it's someone at the bus stop or it's someone at the reception as we come in to a building or something like that. And that's one of the reasons why people feel slightly allergic to it, because they feel that it's associated with a certain social distance. But I disagree. I think that, there's a matter of knowing who you should be doing small talk with, and we can discuss that. But I think what's really valuable about it is that it kicks off an interaction. It's a way to find some common ground with someone who you've never met. And, that's a very important little bit of social lubricant when we live in the massive societies that we live in, and we're often talking to complete strangers.
I totally see how that works. And I was thinking about how much I missed those small, apparently meaningless conversations during lockdowns, when we couldn't kind of get out and brush up against strangers in the supermarket or the cafe or whatever. But don't we also do it with people we do know? I mean, we often kind of tick off a few little boxes about, the kids and the partner and how's your work thing when you catch up with your friends and family.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd call those things small talk. I guess there is a matter of kind of opinion there. But, the opposite end of small talk might be something like, deep and meaningful. We're talking about the meaning of life and this kind of thing. But there's a lot of stuff between that. And if we're talking about just some bit of practicality to do with kids, it's not exactly small talk in that it's part of organizing our lives. If it's got to do with, talking about a movie that we saw, this kind of thing, it might feel a bit like small talk, but what we're often doing is expressing how we feel about that experience that we had, and it gives you an opportunity to align with the other person and, I liked it just like you did, or I had the same view as you had, and that might help us to kind of cement who we are to each other in some kind of way. If you go too far with that, if you're talking about stuff that's too light on for the relationship you're in with that person, well, that's when people start to kind of complain about it, that it's not perhaps revealing enough about the person's personality or feelings when such a revealing would be appropriate.
Wow. So that sounds like you need quite a finely tuned social radar to work out in what circumstances and at what degree of closeness you should be revealing which kinds of information.
Yeah, exactly. So we live in very complex forms of society, and it doesn't matter sort of when in history or where you lived. It's not just because we live in, for example, myself living in the middle of a big city. Anybody, anywhere is part of a kind of an onion skin style of kind of set of relationships. So at the very core, you've got, your closest people who support you. One level out, you have people who you tend to rely on quite a lot. Another level out, it sort of goes out in these levels. And we need to know how to behave with people who are in those respective levels to keep that calibrated, to be sort of appropriate in the things that we choose to talk about. And you're right, people are very, very well calibrated and sensitive to these things. So take an example of the kind of thing that you really should tell someone in your inner circle before you tell someone in your outer circle. So you might take a pregnancy test and find out that you're pregnant. Now, who's the first person you're going to tell? Are you just going to tell random people on the street? Are you going to tell, your dentist or maybe your student if you're teaching a class? Are you going to put it on Instagram? You maybe should talk to your partner.
Maybe.
Or people who are closer to you before you kind of advertise that information. And so that's a sort of an extreme end of the scale, the opposite of small talk, really, announcing that you've become pregnant or you've lost your job or whatever, big news. But there's a lot, as I said, between that and how's the weather. And we're very careful to calibrate those. Another example would be just aches and pains and kind of health issues. You don't tend to talk to those to, you know, the person at reception as you walk into the ABC building. But you should talk to, if you withhold that sort of talk from people who you know well, then they get to feel that you're being overly distant from them and this kind of thing. So there's a great sensitivity to calibrating the subject matter with the kind of relationship we have with someone.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I feel that Tricia at reception and I have quite a bond now. I've forgotten my past a lot of times and we've had a lot of conversations. So yeah, point taken. We're speaking with Nick Enfield, who's a professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney and the author of a book called How We Talk, The Inner Workings of Conversation, looking at the role of small talk. And Nick, it sounds like it's not so much about the type of information that's being transmitted. It's not the information explicitly itself. It's some other layer of information is being exchanged when we do small talk.
Yeah, it's a combination. I think some the kinds of things I was just discussing are about the content of the information, but there are certainly other layers of meaning. So one of those layers of meaning is just if you spend time talking to someone, no matter what you talk about, whether it's, you know, the footy or the weather or, you know, whatever it is, you are, by virtue of having that conversation with them, you're devoting a stretch of time to spending time with them. And that you know, you mentioned earlier how we mark kind of social relationships. Well, many creatures that don't have language will mark close social relations by doing things like grooming. So monkeys and apes will often spend time kind of scratching each other's backs. And it's not really designed to clean their skin, or it might do that a bit. It's actually much more, it has a much more important function, which is that it displays who they're prepared to kind of devote their time with. It takes time, right? And if you can't have two conversations at once. So if you're having a conversation with someone, then it indicates that you're willing to spend that time with them. Now, some small talk, of course, happens because, you know, you're waiting, for example, at the bus stop. You can't do something else with that time, so you strike up a bit of conversation. But a lot of the time, stopping, spending a minute talking to someone, that shows, whatever it is that you talk about, shows you have an interest in kind of forming that relationship. And if you get to know, for example, you work in a company, you get to know the people at reception, you get to know the people in admin, you know, people notice that and appreciate that, and you do that through what people sometimes call small talk. And if you avoid it, then you don't build a relationship, however superficial that might be, with those people, because you're evidently not prepared to give up the time even to talk about the weather.
Really fascinating texts coming in as we're speaking, Nick. Kate says, living by myself, I find I have lost the art or ability for continual small talk. I can discuss a subject and then find I can't think of anything to say, or I say something inappropriate according to them. So I find I don't mix much at all now, says Kate. And it sounds like, as Nick was saying, that practice really does help in that situation. You've got to hone those skills. Small talk works differently in small scale societies, says another text, whereas there is great familiarity. That's a really interesting point, isn't it, Nick? I'm wondering how transactional we feel about small talk, or about our conversation in general in our particular society. Is that one of the reasons why some people find it boring or think it's useless?
Well, I suppose, you know, by transactional, I'm not sure quite what you mean with that.
Well, just that you're more interested in explicit information, useful information that's being transferred, or you don't see small talk and social bonding as important.
Oh, I see.
It's more about, yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So transactional as in, you know, I just want to extract information from you and I'll give you information.
Yeah, and where is this going to get me?
Well, it shows, you know, that language has many layers. And so one of the things that it does do is transfer information, often valuable information. And if that's all you're interested in, then you're treating other people like, you know, you would treat your computer or sort of, you know, the internet or something. And so, you know, that's the other danger. If you don't engage in sufficient small talk, well, people will feel that you're kind of being extractive. I mean, it's interesting to look at the difference with small scale societies, as your text raised. People in those kinds of societies do indeed know each other very well, so you don't have that kind of challenge of anonymous people nearly so much. But you certainly do have a lot of kind of what seemingly mundane chit-chat about very, you know, they'll be talking about things that have gone on in the fields. They were out doing their farming during the day and kind of recounting experiences or recounting events that everybody was present for. So you're not exactly informing yourselves, but it has that sense of sort of going back over events and building a common understanding of what happened. So an example might be just somebody carried out a certain action. Maybe they, you know, cut a tree that shouldn't have been cut or something like that. And having a bit of small talk about that allows everyone to just gauge each other's reaction and feeling towards that, even though it seems like a minor matter. We're very sensitive. We remember what people thought and felt, and small talk allows us to kind of air all those little opinions and calibrate to each other.
Lovely text here from Anna in Melbourne. Often when I walk past people in my neighbourhood, I smile and have a little chat. Sometimes my six-year-old says, "Why did you just chat with them or smile at them? They're a stranger." And I try to explain to them the purpose of small talk as a way to connect or make people feel nice, which is exactly what we're hearing from Nick Enfield, who's a professor of linguistics at the University of Sydney. His book's called How We Talk, The Inner Workings of Conversation. I wanted to ask too, Nick, about the gender differences, perhaps in the approach to small talk, how we do it, but also how it's perceived.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, oftentimes the stereotype, I suppose, would be that, you know, men are interested in things and women are interested in relationships. So that would certainly suggest that, you know, that women are going to be more likely to engage in small talk. But I doubt that, because I think that, you know, all human beings are very invested in maintaining social relations of the right kind. And all you have to do is talk to a couple of blokes at some period after the football game and, you know, you can hear them kind of small talking in very much the sense I was just describing. So, you know, if we've both watched the same footy game, we know what happened, we know the outcome. But we can talk about it for an hour, and what we're doing is sort of, you know, a combination of showing off what we noticed, displaying our knowledge, but also those functions I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, allowing you to see, well, which players do I think are poor and which do I think are good. And so it's all really about bonding. So,
and as you said, it really is about working out whether your values align, isn't it? That kind of example is really a good one for that.
Yeah, exactly. So recounting experiences is very important for that. And it's something that we spend a lot of time doing in conversation, is telling each other stories that could be, you know, seemingly very superficial or mundane, but they allow us to gauge each other, sound each other out, and kind of put money in the bank, in a sense, in terms of just our knowledge about each other. And later on another occasion, we can draw on that information that came out during a, you know, a sort of a bit of light conversation, but it allows us to point to that common ground and kind of recall, oh yeah, we've spoken on many occasions, and that shows that we're more than just strangers.
Yep. I did wonder too, Nick, about the tendency of some people to dismiss small talk as idle chit-chat and useless. Is there a gendered aspect to that? As some feminist scholars have argued in the past, that, you know, this kind of social bonding is often dismissed and often performed by women.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a danger in mixing the stereotypes from, you know, what really happens. And that's in a way one of the important kind of dangers that someone might want to point out there, that I don't think we want to kind of recommend or demonize small talk or other kind of conversational practices in terms of, let's say, stereotypes around them to do with gender or other kinds of stereotypes. I mean, I think that there's a lot of personal difference as well, a lot of individual variants, which I think would be quite a lot more, quite a lot greater than that sort of between different social groups. So one of your texts earlier was about somebody who is, you know, living a certain lifestyle on their own that makes a much bigger difference to the kinds of small talk they'll engage in. And we all know that, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, there's a great variance in personality, that some people are excellent at small talk. They're very engaging. They're very proactive about it. Other people are super shy and kind of hold back. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of reasons why some people engage more in small talk than others, and picking them apart's a, you know, a really interesting puzzle.
Yes, indeed. I love some of these texts coming from really different perspectives on small talk, Nick. One says, I prefer connection by small talk over connection by complaining. I hate it when people use random bitching to try to make a connection. Interesting use of words there too. Molly in St. Lucia says, now that I'm retired and don't go out much and mix much, my small talk is done daily via text with the network of people around me. Small talk at bus stops, says another text. Sadly, it's greatly withered with everyone using earbuds. And this one too, I used to be hopeless at small talk. For work, I learned small talk as a preamble to a meeting. And I then discovered this is the place to learn lots about people without cross-examination and the context for the meetings. Some of those clients are now friends. Small talk is the glue to the relationships. Is small talk a way of kind of easing the pressure if you're going to have bigger conversations with those people afterwards, Nick?
Yeah, very much is, if it's done right. And I think that, you know, that example of a business meeting is a really good one where, you know, every conversation that you have has got a time course, right? So it starts at a certain point, it builds over time. At a certain point, oftentimes you've got to get to a certain bit of business, you know, the real reason why you're having the meeting or the real reason why you're having the call. And everything up to that point has kind of prepared you for that. And so the small talk serves that kind of function. There's a very interesting study done in the US of parents or caregivers taking children to doctors, to GPs' offices to get just for doctor's appointments for coughs and colds. And they found that there was a problem that oftentimes the children, at a, you know, the key moment, they would get asked a question by the doctor and they just wouldn't answer, they wouldn't speak. So the researchers looked at these conversations and they found that if the doctor at the beginning of the consultation directs a couple of questions to the kid, just like, oh, is that your teddy bear? What's its name? Or, you know, did you play sport on the weekend? Just total small talk. If they direct a couple of questions the kid's way at the very beginning, then they're much more likely later in the consultation to answer questions that are about the real business, or how do you feel, have you got pain, or what's wrong with you, kind of thing. So that, I think, is a really good demonstration of how small talk opens up a channel. It kind of starts some gears rolling, and then they're open for when the kind of real business has to begin. And very often, whether it's a work situation or another situation, there's some real business that's got to be done at some point, and this is all kind of lubricant for that.
Yeah, there's a great text on that, Nick, that says, I joined a mother's group years ago and discerned quite quickly that there was one woman there who was on the other end of the political spectrum to me, but gently, through weekly catch-ups as a group and connecting over children and activities, we were able to broach other deeper topics that I don't think we could have straight off the bat. Well, I was struck too by what Kate said earlier, Nick, about, you know, I live alone and I'm a bit rusty at it. How can we improve? And I guess the cornerstone to that is, what does good small talk look like?
Well, improvement, I think, is like with every other skill, it's practice, and it takes, you know, going out and doing the practice. And there's plenty of opportunities for that if you get out and about. You know, there are people who have opportunities to talk. I find myself striking up conversations all over the place for fun, and, you know, things happen that are really interesting. I think the question of, you know, whether it's working or not, well, your best gauge of that, your best measurement of that is the response of the other human being, right? So, you know, of course, some of us are more or less sensitive to how others respond. But, you know, it's like everything. You get out there, you try it, and you see what the results were, and you know, you try to either repeat when it went well, or you try to adjust if it didn't go quite so well. But as with everything, practice makes perfect.
Yes, indeed. And good luck to you, Kate, and to anyone else who might feel they need to exercise those small talk muscles. Nick, it's been fascinating chatting with you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Nick Enfield, Professor of Linguistics at the University of Sydney. His book is called How We Talk, The Inner Workings of Conversation.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.